ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I'm Branham, the assistant to the regional manager, Joe George, behind the glass. It is a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Fun show planned for you. Mr. Bracketologist himself, Joe Lenardi, quirky little fella. He'll be joining us at 1 o'clock. Speaking, this is a perfect day for Joe Lenardi to come on with us, too. Did I say anything wrong? You don't think he's a quirky little fella?
I don't know if you asked Joe for, like, best descriptions he'd feel good about, that quirky little fella would be up on the list.
Yeah, I feel like it's not top, like, it's not top tier for him.
It's not the way to, like, kind of sell Joe Lenardi like at the, 1 o'clock?
No.
Like the intro for the bench when it says the premier NFL draft analyst. Like, that's got some punch to it. That's got some rock 'em sock 'em to it. If you followed that up and went, and oh, by the way, the quirky little fella that does the brackets, Joe Lenardi. I don't know if that's got the same cachet.
I hear what y'all are saying. Like, I'm not wrong, but maybe not the best way to sell Lenardi joining us at 1 o'clock. But Lenardi, he always brings great stuff. He'll be joining us at 1 o'clock to talk about the brackets coming up, which, of course, the unveiling. What is it? It's a week from this Sunday. We're what, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? We're like 10, 11 days away from brackets coming out. Everybody can start filling out their brackets, which you can do at our website, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Also, speaking of brackets, it's a great day to start with, have Lenardi with us, because we're doing Bad Take Boulevard in bracket form. We're going to have a 16-take bracket. The worst takes we've heard in the 2022-23 season, the very worst, the worst ones that we've had all in the last 2 years, we're going to unveil our brackets, our Bad Take Boulevard brackets, coming up at 2 o'clock. So can't wait for that. Anyways, also, how about J-Bar-M coming through the clutch? Like, we had to be here a little bit early today because Joe George summoned us, which thanks a lot for doing that. I had to wake up a little bit earlier.
The puppeteer pulls the string.
You're welcome.
I had to take the toll road on the way in today because I was like, you know what? I got to get here for Joe George.
Thank you.
I was in my office doing show prep, and all of a sudden I went, oh, today was the day he wanted us in early? Gosh.
Hey, at least you listened to me, Joel, and showed up at the appropriate time.
Yeah.
Jeremy showed up 15 minutes early.
Yeah, what a terrible job by me showing up
and
early.
And then you're like, I thought it was at 10:30.
Well, you got to give him credit because the right time to be on time is early.
Yeah, if you're 15 minutes early, it means you're on time.
I was early, too early. I just let the record straight.
Time.
Actually, I made it.
I'm notoriously late. I'll be honest with you.
I feel like 4 minutes early, like Joel was, that's good timing.
I can't stand.
Were you late? Hold on a second. Were you bothered by the 15 minutes we spent together waiting?
No, I'm just saying you gave me a hard time because you thought it was at 10:30. Yeah. I'm just giving it back.
You bothered by my presence?
I don't know that you're in the position to be bothered by much these days, part timer.
That's a good point.
I mean,
who?
You.
Why?
Well, I thought you were looking at me for a second.
No, I'm talking
about
him.
I'll be pretty part time here pretty soon, though. I might miss more March days than make March days. Okay. We'll see about that. Anyways. So, you know, we had to be here early. It breaks up the routine, of course. You know, what are you doing for lunch? All of that. And J-Bar-M, Taylor and Emily swung on by here.
Yeah.
They came through in the clutch. They brought us some ribs. They brought us some chicken. They brought us a nice, like, their little way to do coleslaw, which is like a little bit of pica in it. We got some peppers in there. Homemade pickles. Unbelievable lunch. Might have the meat sweats, but unbelievable lunch.
Joe could not get enough of the homemade pickles.
I love the pickles.
Yeah, he's a pickle connoisseur.
Do you do the pickled onions?
I've never done pickled onions.
Yeah, there's pickled onions in here, too. I'm not a big onion guy, but the pickled onions are really good. The pickled pickles are very good.
Yep.
But, of course, they're known for their meat. And these ribs were fantastic. I had a bite. I had one chicken wing. It was very good. Did y'all have any of the chicken? Because it was fantastic.
I did. It's a quarter chicken. It's really, really good. Perfectly done. And a lot of taste to it.
We're going to be there late March.
Yep.
So all of our listeners right now that probably are on their way to get lunch and like, oh, darn it, I got to go get some chicken sandwich. I got to get some terrible, greasy burger. We're sitting here talking about the greatness that is J-Bar-M. Well, you'll have an opportunity to come hang out with us at J-Bar-M a little bit later or just swing on by anytime. 2201 Leland Street. Fantastic food. They have a happy hour, too, that's kind of like in my wheelhouse, pardon the pun. 9 to 11 p.m. is their happy hour. So a happy 2 hour. And they do it Tuesday through Friday. So if you're looking for a late happy hour, $5 cocktails, $4 draft beers, $4 wine, and also something that caught my eye, they have this rodeo bone-in ribeye, which unbelievable how good this looks. Look how good that looks. It comes with a loaded potato.
Ribeyes the other day.
We were. That's right. And this one's only $50. A bone-in ribeye. Where can you get a bone-in ribeye? A bone-in ribeye for only $50. That's how elite they are. They're creating foods. It's they're very innovative.
What did he say that they marinate and everything for like 2 hours?
Yeah, he said
on
that
a smoker and then put it on the grill.
They smoke it for 2 hours and then a nice little sear on the grill at the very end. I'm gonna have to swing on by and get this. $50 for a bone-in ribeye. You can't beat that. Fabulous food. If you're looking for a lunch option, 2201 Leland Street, tell them that we sent you. And we're going to be doing a live remote there later this month as well. Thanks to them for bringing food. The ribs are fantastic. The chicken was fantastic. It was all very, very good. You know what else has been fantastic? And 2201 Leland, not very far away from Minute Maid Park. Good place to pregame before an Astro game. The Astros have been very good over the last six seasons as well. As we know, the Astros, they're doing spring training today. They had Kyle Tucker in the leadoff spot today. Now, of course, we know it's just
second
to get them at bats.
Second time this week, isn't it?
Is it the second time this week?
So, yeah.
We know it's only to get them at bats, things like that. They're not going to use Kyle Tucker as a leadoff guy. But, boy, it caught my eye. I sure like Kyle Tucker at the top of the batting order. I like that very much. Maybe a backup plan. But we're going to start today's show with our countdown, our Astros countdown. We are now all the way down to just 20 shows left before Astros opening day. We've been asking you an Astros opening day question on each and every one of these Astro opening day countdowns. So 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch. I'm not yet. Twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. The question we're asking you today, what is the Astros' number one team strength and what is the number one team flaw this season?
Team flaw. Boy, I'll tell you what. For me, the strength, although it doesn't look at it like it right now, so I would say there's two really big strengths, but I'd say the biggest strength is just the depth and the talent in the lineup. I think that you have versatility. You have from either side of the plate, you have average, you have power. Now without the shift, you have guys that I think, and we've talked about this in the past, I really believe this is the lineup that's going to benefit the most from not having the shift this year. When you talk about the likes of Brantley and Tucker and Yordan, and I believe for both power and average, the most complete lineup in the major leagues this year. And so I will say strength is that. I would say weakness to me is depth at the catcher position. I mean, it's also going to be depth in the starting rotation if these little kind of things, bumps in the road, keep happening, like Lance McCullers. And some people were losing their mind over Hunter Brown yesterday. He was experimenting with pitches. I'm not going to worry about that.
But it's like a reliever.
But
Keith Law, probably.
Okay. So that's why before I say that, I'll go depth at the catcher position because it's even more important this year when you've got these young arms throughout the rotation. They're talented, but a lot of times we saw what Martin Maldonado means to this team as a psychologist and a coach on the field and all those kind of things. And God forbid something happens to him, because I don't believe that the two young kids behind him have the ability to do what he does with his pitching staff and have the trust and the confidence of the pitchers. So I think that that's where I would say is something to keep an eye on. That's why I kept, you know, leading to the possibility of trading for a veteran backup catcher before the season starts.
I think you're onto something there. I think it's going to be in the summer.
Yeah, it's quite possible the deadlines are off and it won't be right at the start of the season, but I think they'll, you know, I don't think they want to get into a situation where they wait until, or hopefully it doesn't, but if something happens, but I think that they're going to be exploring the teams.
Let me figure out how I want to phrase this. Because, look, everything about Maldonado, he's your starting catcher.
Yeah.
The amount of games, you know, that's up for debate. That's up for a conversation. Do you start him 120 games? Do you start him 100 games? Do you give the backup young catcher X amount of starts? All of those things are things that Dana Brown, Dusty Baker will have a plan with going into opening day. And, of course, like Mike Tyson said, the great Mike Tyson, plan goes away as soon as you get punched in the face. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. Oftentimes it's injuries, guys struggling, things like that. Martin Maldonado is the best catcher on this team overall. If one of the young catchers on this team, and I don't even want to have like the who should be the catcher, Lee or Diaz. Let's just say one young catcher, be very broad with a very blanket statement. Would that young rookie catcher be better offensively than Maldonado if both of them were given starter at-bats?
Would they be offensively?
Yeah. Is that a stupid question? 713-780-3776.
I think it's pretty fair to say that, well, no, you know what? I can't say that because I need to see enough at bats. I know that Corey Lee's got a stick. I mean, he's known as an offensive, a good offensive catcher. Like, regardless of what he does defensively, and he's not bad, But he's known as a, you know, it's a rarity sometimes to find catchers that can really hit for power and possibly for average. I think Corey Lee is that kind of guy. I think Diaz could be that guy. We know that Maldi's not that guy. So the only thing I would say is the advantage of seeing major league pitching and knowing those things. Maldi had a sneaky power bat last year and had, what, 15 bombs or something like that, where that was a career high, I believe, for him. But I think that we're not there yet to say that two young kids that haven't had a full season in the major leagues are better offensive players than Maldi, but I think that the potential is definitely there that both of them are better than he is offensively.
Everybody would tell you that because they have high expectations, or at least modest expectations, for Lee and Diaz, and because we know that Maldonado last year, aside from setting a career high in home runs with 15, yep, hit 186. Yep. So many people think that Corey Lee, Yiner Diaz, if you started them 120 games, got them 400, 450 plate appearances, that they would put up better numbers than Martin Maldonado. I ultimately think that they would, but you bring up the good points. Like, you don't know if Corey Lee is going to be a 4A player. You don't know if Yiner Diaz can crush minor league pitching, right, but not be able to hit major league pitching. I tend to say yes, and I probably do err on the side of, yeah, you dummy. Of course Corey Lee and or Yiner Diaz would have better offensive numbers than Martin Maldonado, but the fear is that it is unknown. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776 on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN. 97.5. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Just 20 shows left until Astros opening day. Today's opening day countdown question: what to you is the Astros overall number one team strength? Blankers thinks it's that offense, being able to have a bunch of offensive weapons throughout the lineup. The number one team flaw: catcher position. Who could say otherwise? What is it for you? One strength, one flaw for the Astros in 2023. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One strength that you need to get in your driveway is a goal from Pro Dunk. They are the absolute best basketball goals on the planet. There's nothing like them, especially in the big box stores. You can't find anything like the quality that they provide at Pro Dunk. They make the highest quality basketball goals that you'll find. Tempered glass backboard, breakaway rim, more on that later. Thick steel pole, stainless steel hardware, making them sturdy and strong, unlike anything you can find in the big box stores. Also, height adjustable. This is where I was going. Lower it down, throw down some jams whenever you put it down to 5 feet. I need to put it down there if I'm throwing down some jams, but when I do, I can trust that breakaway rim. Or if you want to work on your shot, raise it up to 10 feet. If you miss a shot, well, it's got that tempered glass backboard to give you that true feel. Or kissing it off the glass, it gives you that true, authentic feel. Also, their accessories are next level. A lot of times in Houston, it gets pretty warm by day, so you might want to be playing at night when the sun goes down, when the weather cools. Well, they have LED light kits for night play. They also have backstop nets, so you don't have to chase the basketball everywhere. Pole pad lettering as well for customization, however you want to customize it. Lots more as well. You can order it all online, including professional installation. Yes, the pros at Pro Dunk will professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do a thing. Let the pros do all of the work for you. Also, I saw a picture the other day from Zach at Pro Dunk. They had a goal at the Northern Lights. They had a goal from Pro Dunk. You can see the Northern Lights in the background. It's pretty awesome, which reminds you the goals in all 50 states across the country, over a dozen countries as well, so you know the quality of Pro Dunk. Call right now, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I've been running around this morning because Joe George used his executive power on the show to have us here early. So everything's been a little bit off. And then we have the great news of J-Bar-M bringing in some fantastic barbecue, which I'm still working on. It's so fantastic. Good. And that means that usually, like, my priorities get shifted very easily. I have ADHD. I'm easily distractible. So I'm just coming around.
We have kids.
We have kids. It sucks up our time. So I'm just coming around to see what our show, what do we call this? Like our show teaser, prep. Our preview on Twitter. Joe will send out, you know, from the station account, today on the Killer Bees with Branham and Blankers. And he's been mentioning his name, too. I'm not sure that Brendan Riley ever mentioned his name. Did Brendan mention his name on the show preview?
I just started it.
Well, but today? You know why? Starting it today?
No, like 2 weeks ago.
You know why he does that, right?
Because he wants to gain followers and admiration.
Well, not only that, but he's tired of people calling him Brendan.
People are still doing that?
Yeah, comparing him to Brendan. So he wants people to know there's a new sheriff in town.
It happened like once last week.
So he's got to do that.
That's it.
Yeah.
So anyways, today's show preview, it's biggest, you know, he's talking about the question we're asking you, which we're still asking, 713-780-3776. We'll get to some of your action here in a couple minutes. Biggest strength and biggest weakness for the Astros in 2023. D'Amico sure loves Jimmy G, and one of the other bullet points that that Joe George mentioned. At 1 o'clock, teasing Joe Lunardi, ESPN bracketologist. And then at the top of the 2 o'clock hour, we're going to start the Bad Take Boulevard Bracket Edition, the 16 worst takes in the 2022-23 season. And we're going to start to vote on who advances in March, who advances in these brackets. And then he puts a little gif out there, makes it look cute, tries to draw attention. He puts a Houston Cougar there, which I admire. Go Cougs. Yeah, I mean, he's trying to catch eyes. So he puts a Houston Cougar player on there, which today's senior day. Go Cougs. He puts a dude that's played like 7 career minutes and transferred at the start of the year. Like, he hasn't even been playing this year.
What does that tell you about how he's going to be all over the Cougs bandwagon for March Madness? Hasn't seen them play.
Yeah.
Probably won't see them play, unless it's a big game.
I've seen him play, not in person.
I asked him the other day, who's his college basketball team? He's like, well, since I've been down here, it's been the Cougars. This gif says otherwise.
Well, I just don't really have a college basketball
team. I thought he said Northwestern or the Illini.
I guess it's Notre Dame, but I don't really follow college basketball.
What about the Flames of Illinois-Chicago?
Hard pass.
No?
Do you feel that Mike Bray got a proper send-off last night?
I thought he announced his unretiring.
He's not retiring. He's just leaving Notre Dame.
No, yeah, it's confusing.
I saw him taking shots with the student body, I think, after the game. I hope it was after the game, not before the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, there was videos of
him taking
shots. I thought
you meant, like, jumpers on the court.
No. Alcoholic shots, which, I mean.
So they won his final home game at Notre Dame last night.
Did they win?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, but now he is going to possibly coach again?
I've been hearing he might go to Georgetown. He's not retiring. He wants to keep coaching.
Old Pat Ewing's got a pretty long... They've extended that guy more than they should have. He didn't win a conference game last year.
You know who else Hurd might be in the mix at Georgetown? Old Slick Rick Pitino.
Well, he does want an upgrade.
Especially now. He's been talking about it. Because in the past, he's like, I'm going to stay at Iona for a certain period of time. Now he's like, yeah, I'm open to other jobs. Like, that would be a really good fit. But yeah, Joe George put in some dude who hasn't played a single minute all year.
It's a good gif.
I think he's at Evansville now, maybe.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he went back home. Up
the
north.
Purple Aces?
Yeah, so anyways, I'm insulted. I'm not going to retweet it. I'm not going to retweet it because my Houston Cougar followers will be insulted. So I just liked it. I'm not retweeting it today, Joe George.
All right, no show promo from Jeremy. Noted.
Anyways, here are the some of the reaction to the strength and weakness. I guess Joe and I haven't brought up ours either. The team strength is interesting because I still think it's the pitching staff as a whole. I know that you lost the Cy Young. I know that you lost Justin Verlander, a 1.75 ERA. I know that Lance McCullers is going to start the year on the IL, not on the opening day roster. He only started 8 games last year. I think that the Astros now, you know, I don't like going to the injury card whenever we have these conversations, but if there are injuries, I think you could see that trickle-down effect hurt the pitching staff. But I'm still very comfortable with the 5 guys you're going to have in this rotation, and I think the Astros' bullpen is the best bullpen we've seen in franchise history. They proved it last year in the playoffs. They proved it really all regular season. They're incredible with the arms that they can go to in that bullpen. So I love the pitching staff even more than an improved offense. I think it is an improved offense, but I don't think the offense has caught up to the pitching, even though it's improved and the pitching staff lost the Cy Young. I'm still going to go with the pitching staff. The number one team flaw, I try to challenge myself to not come up with the same one as you, because, I mean, I think most people would point to catcher as, like, the top weakness, mm-hmm. the top flaw on this team. Maybe some people could point to center field as well.
Center field's a possibility.
Center field as well. How about the bottom of the order? Can I get away by saying 7, 8, 9, the bottom of the order could be the team flaw this season? Now, the struggle there is somebody hitting 7th is either going to be Jeremy Peña or Michael Brantley. So whenever that is the leadoff of the top of the order, when that's your 7-hole hitter in 7, 8, 9, that makes it a little bit of a softer stance. But 8, 9, like center field, big hole. The Astros got nothing from the catcher position last year. Maldi hit about .180. So I'll say the bottom of the order with the emphasis on the 8-9.
Okay. I mean, last year for certain, that was a major issue.
Because Brantley was hurt.
Yeah, because we said that was basically almost guaranteed 2 out of 3 outs, if not all 3 outs, almost every time we flipped before you flipped the lineup. I want to hear what Joe has to say about his, too, because I got another sleeper one that kind of goes with some of the ones we were just pointing out on the sly. Because there's another one that, again, and it may be something that's going to be very pertinent early on. But, Joe, I'll let you go first.
I'll go strength. I'm going to just say I'm going to literally contradict myself here.
That's great.
In both of these. Strength, I'm going to say the overall bullpen. I just think it's the strongest part. You lose Verlander, Hunter Brown's first season, McCullers is hurt. So, like, that's where, like, the rotation gets dinged for me.
Yeah.
So it's just the bullpen is the strength of this team.
That's kind of being more specific than mine. I like that because I do think the bullpen's better than the starting rotation.
Plus, the fact that we always say, you know, if all good bullpens have when you're really good, you have a 6, a 7, an 8, and a 9 guy. But they have so much depth that they can rotate guys after those guys. So, yes.
I can't wait to see where he's going with this contradiction.
And then I think my flaw, I'm not really sure even how to word it, but I think not adding a lefty.
They added Matt Gage.
But the quality of lefty you added, I think, is the flaw.
Do you see how good Matt Gage was last year?
He's better than he got waived. He's better than the Fresh Prince.
He got waived this year. He was great last year. And last year with Toronto, he had a 1.38 ERA last year in Toronto.
But then why is he available?
Because he
Toronto had a surplus. They're trying to cut salaries. They didn't have a place for him on the roster, so they cut him.
Yeah, I'm just going to go. My flaw is going to be the lefty options for Dusty.
He's better than the Fresh Prince.
He played in it. He pitched in 11
games. That's
Will
Smith,
13
by the way.
Innings.
Oh,
and his minor league numbers were not good. I think a Loogie's overrated. I don't think a Loogie matters.
But I think Dusty wants.
And that's why I think it's a flaw.
No doubt. How is it not overrated?
Because I think it's Dusty wants to use it. Like, he wants the lefty. So my flaw would be that he's going to overuse Gage and use him in the wrong times.
I could see that.
That's where I think the flaw is.
He does have a propensity for overusing guys he's enamored with.
Yeah.
Like, if you go to Matt Gage over Brian Abreu in a close game in the seventh,
because
there's a lefty for the final out of the inning, Joe's on to something.
Remember how he was enamored with lefty or not? When he gets enamored with guys like Seth Martinez or Daly Raley, he will overuse and exhaust them when he feels like that's his security blanket.
713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. What are your strengths and weaknesses for the Houston Astros in 2023? Dr. Dre says the flaw is base running, hands down.
I don't know hands down. Because they're so good offensively that the base running blunders, which are there and they do happen, but they're easy to overcome when you have a lineup as talented as this, as opposed to other teams that get exposed for base running errors and it costs them games.
Yeah, see, I think that base running has been very, very, how do I want to phrase this? Like, it's almost been taken out of the game. You see fewer and fewer stolen bases than ever before.
It's going to change.
That's kind of what I was getting at. Like, you've seen fewer and fewer stolen bases. Dudes don't really take the extra base anymore because there's been this high demand for not giving away outs. Like, Moneyball talks about that. Like, Moneyball's whole philosophy was don't give away outs, which is why they went high on base percentage guys that were kind of undervalued. They were a team that never ran because they didn't want to give away one of those 27 outs because they're so precious, which is true. I mean, that's how the other team gets out of innings. You get three outs. That's how other teams win games. You get 27 outs. So it sounds like a very simple way to look at it, but that's kind of been the trend in baseball. That's one of the reasons that Manfred and Major League Baseball are trying to add more things to the game that are going to make it more, one, exciting. All these rules are in an effort to be more exciting, but they want to add the running game back into it, the bigger bases. They want the closer play. They want to incentivize the runners trying to steal. They want to incentivize the runners trying to go to extra bases, first to third, I guess home plate's not going to be bigger, but you get the point. Like, I think that the running game is going to be more magnified this year than it's been in, like, the last 2 decades.
No question. I thought the same thing. I thought that, you know, when you limit how many times a guy can go over to first base as a pitcher, and then that sets off the base runner to know, well, I got free rein now to do whatever I want. The bases are bigger so that you get the stolen base a little easier, and we know that it's always a bang-bang play in most cases at second base, and if you get that little extra advantage to the runner, it's another chance for teams to really accentuate more running, and I think you're going to see it happen. So I think it's going to be interesting how it plays a bigger role in the game, and that's one of the things that really bothered me about the rule changes. I think they're going to adjust to the clock for both the hitter and the pitcher, and I think that's fine. But I think that the integrity of the game, to keep it the way it's been, is something that bothers me, that they're now limiting part of the game, which are moves to first base, and then altering part of the game by increasing the size of the bases, even if it is just that little amount. It does matter, and that's why I've also been to the point of saying, hey, look, I appreciate all these changes to try and speed up the game, like they're doing with the runner on second base in extra innings. But make it all go away in the playoffs. You can keep the time clocks if you want. But make the other stuff and the gimmicky stuff go away so we stick to the integrity of the game when it matters most.
To Dre's point about the Astros on the base pass, like, Jose Altuve's never been – like, he gets thrown out on the bases a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Tucker's, I think, a really good base runner. Bregman doesn't really take extra bases, doesn't steal bags, so he's a net wash. Jordan Alvarez doesn't take extra bases.
Anywhere.
Pena's been, like, okay. the Astros don't take extra bases. They don't steal bases. Jose Altuve is the only guy who can be aggressive, and he gets thrown out a lot. And some of the advanced like running metrics show that he's actually
they would
not
run
a good
Jake
base
a little
runner.
Bit if Jake was healthy.
Yeah, they would. And he's I think he's kind of like average. Like he's a speedy guy, but he's kind of like an average base stealer.
And now
as
because
a speedy
he's brittle, they don't want to risk him getting hurt.
Yeah, although they might not be worried too much about his health because I don't know how strongly they feel about Jake Meyers.
So, well, that's kind of where I was going. I wouldn't get to it after the break, but that's. The one sleeper pick in terms of
let's tease it.
Yeah, when we come back,
strength or weakness?
It's a weakness.
Okay.
Yeah, so when we come back, I got an extra one.
Your reaction as well. A lot of people waited on the HRMP listener line 713-780-ESPN HRMP listener line 713-780. I'm laughing at what Ocho said 713-780-3776. Strength and weakness for the Astros in 23. It's our opening day countdown question. Only 20 shows left until Astros opening day. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, what are the Astros' biggest strengths and weakness going into the 2023 season? What is it? You said you had a
sleeper.
A sleeper. What is it?
I think the sleeper is depth in the outfield. Because of the fact that we don't know when Michael Brantley's going to be back, we don't know what to expect of Jake Meyers. Now, look, early on, he got a double the other day. He looks like and he claims to be as healthy as he's been, and he's excited, and you know, he wants to show the world that he's back. Well, we'll see, but that's all talk. And if you find out that Jake still isn't what he used to be, and you know that Michael Brantley, who's coming back from shoulder surgery, is probably not going to be 100% start, though he says he thinks he's going to be,
mm-hmm.
But worst case scenario, if both those guys aren't panning out, now there's a little bit more worry and concern about the fact that from a lineup perspective and a depth perspective and a defensive perspective, you got some issues in terms of depth in the outfield.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, did you mention Yordan?
No, well, no, and that's another thing.
That's another thing.
I mean, and if Bagwell insists he's going to be out there 50% of the time, I mean, there's some issues that could be had in the outfield, and they didn't address a backup outfielder in the offseason, which they could have done, at a corner outfielder, which we said was on their shopping list.
That's the one thing that I would dock the Astros' offseason points, which overall I like the offseason. I said it back in September 2nd. Like, let Verlander walk, use the savings on a first baseman, Abreu, use it on a left fielder, Brantley, use it on an arm in the bullpen, Montero. Did they overspend a little bit on Montero? Yeah, I think it's fair to say that they probably paid him $3 million more per year than what the market would have been. It may probably Abreu. I think Abreu was a little slightly, well, I mean, Rizzo's contract was high too, though.
See, but I agreed with you on all that, but when I thought about that, the corner outfielder wasn't Brantley in my mind. It was going outside the organization to find one of the better free agent corner outfielders. Mm-hmm. So I think in a lot of people's minds, it was disappointing they didn't maybe in their mind upgrade. Michael Brantley could be an upgrade if he goes back to hitting 300. Now, he's never going to be a defensive stud.
Yeah.
But what he brings to you from a leadership perspective is one thing. What he brings to you when he gets on base all the time is hitting 300 is completely another where he takes you over a Benintendi. He can take you over some of the guys that were out there.
The one that I would where I docked them points in the offseason, minor points, is that they didn't sign a super utility guy. Like, that would have been the cherry on top to a really good offseason for me. A guy that can play corner outfield.
Yeah.
He gives you corner outfield insurance in case Brantley, who's in his late 30s coming off a major shoulder surgery, can't be as good as he once was. Somebody that can also be an infielder and provide some insurance there in case you have a guy that goes down, or you're just giving guys days off, which, I mean, the Astros with Dusty Baker, a team that's been in first place for many of the regular season dates on the calendar, or a team that's going to rest players, as most Major League Baseball teams do. And whenever you rest players in the past, the Astros would have the option of going down to a really solid Aledmys Diaz. Before that, it was Marwin Gonzalez, who one year led the Astros in RBIs. Now the drop-off is Mauricio Dubon and David Hensley. Like, that's a significant drop-off.
Or the kid that's having a good start to the spring training.
Who's that?
But, he threw a guy out yesterday. He's got a couple of bombs already.
You're talking about Durden, outfielder?
Durden.
Yeah. Which he's not going to be an infielder, but he can play outfield.
No, I'm saying as an outfielder, there's a guy that people talk about is, he could step right in and he could fill in if Brantley's not ready to start the season or if they've got depth issues. Well, again, whether you call him a four A player or some guys from AAA on, they can be really good minor league players. But we've even seen it with guys that turn out to be studs like Bregman. They get off to slow starts when they face major league pitching every day, and they adjust to what it's like to be in the show. And I think that that's the concern. This team is so experienced. This team is so talented. But all of a sudden, you look at the outfield and go, but if you get past their starters in the outfield right now, they've got an issue to deal with.
The one that hit the home run yesterday was Melton, but you were referring to...
I said he hit a couple home runs this spring.
Yeah, Durden's the one that hit a couple home runs.
But he threw someone out yesterday.
Durden's the one that's closer. I think Melton's the better prospect because they drafted him last year, second round, Oregon State. Like, he's the better prospect, but he's still a
few years
away. Wasn't
Durden the guy that... Was that who McTaggart was talking about?
Yes. Yeah. Durden's the dude that McTaggart said has an outside chance to win the center field job, which might be a little bit early on that, but maybe he can make
the
opening day roster.
Outfield, yeah.
Yeah, maybe he's the dude that can make the opening day roster. We'll have to see. 713-780-3776. Here's a few of the textures. Highest strengths, highest weaknesses. 8094, strength, chemistry, not much roster turnover from last season. So the chemistry still high, good, you know, clubhouse, all of that, which I think sometimes we can overrate. Like, remember when Carlos Correa was going to leave and the Astros had no leadership and the mound visits and all that? Oh, man. They won a World Series. Weaknesses, as you mentioned, injuries throughout the roster. Do they have enough to step up if injuries occur? I hate having the injury conversation because it's such a cop-out, but to me, it's the depth. It's the depth, especially with the position players, where it's like, okay, if, knock on wood, if Jose Altuve has to miss a month because of a strained hamstring, who is your second baseman for those 28 games? David Hensley, who we've seen for, what, 15 at-bats in the bigs?
But that's the guy that's going to get the first crack at it,
yeah,
without question. And you're right. Look, I mean, there were guys out there. There's still a guy out there. But there were guys out there.
What's going on with that?
I don't know. But there were enough guys out there, and we talked about it until we started checking them off the list, that Jean Segura was a guy that could play every infield position. He's a really good hitter. He's a really good contact hitter. Yeah. He's a solid defender. And they didn't have any interest. Yeah. Or whether
he got a starting job. I love the Segura
option. Profar, because he can play infield and outfield. He gives you that extra versatility of being able to play both out in the outfield and multiple infield positions, and a guy that started in the past that gives you a stronger option with depth. They passed on that, too.
He's out there. He's a free agent.
He's still out there.
No one signed Jurickson Profar. It blows my mind. I think he's a Boris guy. I think he's asking for too much money. That's got to be what it is, right? Or that he's just an awful person.
Look, like, the elephant in the room is Yuli's still out there, but Yuli is limited defensively in terms of playing second base, third base.
And let's be honest. I think Yuli is a fringe big leaguer at this point. Okay. What Yuli put on his resume last year in the regular season isn't a big league first
baseman.
And if
he's looking for 2 years, no one's going to give it to him.
No.
You know, it's a prove-it one-year deal at this point at minimal dollars, and at a certain point, he's probably going to have to wake up and realize, if I want to play in the major leagues this year, that's what I'm going to have to accept.
With Profar, they must be waiting for an injury, where it's like, okay, a contender loses their starting left fielder or their starting second baseman, and it's like, okay, now we're going to go sign Jurickson Profar to a $12 million one-year deal.
Yeah.
That's got to be what
Boris
it
is still hanging on, trying to hope that there's one home run left that he can cash in on. But I think sooner than later, he's probably going to have to come back to reality and say, if I want to play this year, I'm either going to pick a contender at a low price, mm-hmm, or I'm going to pick a team desperate at a high price, but it's only going to be a one-year deal.
Josh in Beaumont says, I think winning last year got the cheating monkey off their back, and that will result in their biggest strength this season, playing carefree. I'm curious what you think about that, because, I mean, the Astros swept the Mariners, they swept the Yankees, and then they beat the Phillies in six.
And this team likes the motivation of pressure.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to make them...
They liked it when they were the bad guys. They loved it, like you said, when they were coming into big regular season series against teams that were already counting it as their World Series, and then basically showing them who their daddy was. So I think that they thrive off of that.
7855, biggest strength pitching, biggest weakness, bottom of the order, or a potential World Series hangover. This one's right up your alley from 2108. Dusty resting players that are on a hot streak.
It can be annoying. Maybe
I've always
more than
Dusty.
Annoying. Sometimes you're such a liar.
I've always been Dusty. You're Dusty. I think that I fell into the trap last year. I think we see it a lot from Astros Twitter, too, is that we live and die on these lineups every day because we're invested. We're passionate about the Astros. Yep. We care about the Astros. We care about every single game of 162, even when they have an eight-game lead on July 23rd. And it's like, oh, my goodness, Dusty Baker's not optimizing the lineup. And I fell into the trap. I'll admit it. I'm not going to lie to you. In hindsight, and now that you have the comfort of winning a World Series, he's resting dudes. Like, he's making sure that those guys get into the playoffs. He's making sure that people, and this is an old school managing tactic that isn't used by a lot of the new school analytical people, is that instead of like reshuffling the lineup every day, he's just going to insert the bench player into that dude's lineup.
Which
dude's
is quirky,
spot,
which is weird, which could be
which
scrutinized, which it has been.
Right.
But everything worked out for him because all season long, as fired up as I got when he did his, you know, healthy days rest and when the guy was red hot sitting him down, the one thing I kept stressing was, as long as he doesn't do it in the playoffs, as long as he doesn't do it in the playoffs and he manages this team correctly so that there's nothing to point a finger at, I'll be fine. And he did just that.
Where they are in the standings is where that, like, matters. Like, if they're in a race, like, that becomes far
where
more
every
annoying.
Game matters, yeah.
Yeah, if they're up 10 games, it's like, who really cares, right? You're going to get to the playoffs. Who cares if you win 98 games versus 96 games if you have nothing to play for? Not Santa says, strength, bullpen, weakness. Orbit's gained weight from celebrating all offseason. Did the alien get fat and happy? Orbit's an alien, right?
I believe so.
He's an alien?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
What else would he be?
The
well, some people look at that as a
happy.
Negative. He's either a space monster or he's an alien.
He's got to be an alien. Like, you're right. That's what I...
Yeah.
I've never referred to Orbit in a sentence as an alien, but as I was thinking about it, what kind of being is he? He's an
Clutch
alien.
Clutch is a bear. Junction Jack was a rabbit. Orbit's an alien.
And what's the guy that sits up on the train?
He's a hillbilly.
Doctor.
It's Bobby Dynamite.
We're playing like a little word association.
That's
now.
Bobby Dynamite.
What did you call him? You called him
a hillbilly.
He called him a hillbilly.
I mean, he sits there with his coveralls on and his boots.
You might get canceled for that.
A hillbilly. I think
people
I
love
say,
Bobby Dynamite.
Is that a negative? I didn't call him a redneck. I called him a hillbilly.
I mean,
fair.
Kind of synonymous, though.
Are they? Now that you could get canceled for. I'm not making that comparison.
Or is a hillbilly and a redneck the same thing? I really don't know. 713-780-3776. Let the Killer Bees know on the HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network was on the Paul Gallant Experience, the most interactive radio show in the Houston market earlier this week. A couple of things that I wanted to bring up that I think might catch your eye. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get to what Daniel Jeremiah Branham had to say on the Paul Gallant Experience a little bit earlier. We'll get to Tommy on the line here.
That must mean he loves Will Levis.
I hope.
Why are you calling him Jeremy?
Just for the wordplay.
Oh.
Just for the wordplay.
He's a Killer Bee, right?
He is now, after the wordplay. Joe George is one that succumbs to peer pressure. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
No, this is not peer pressure. Awful. This is a valid point.
But it's kind of the definition of peer pressure.
No, it's not. You said my Twitch account looked like a burner.
It was Joe George 34.
Yeah.
Which does look like a burner.
So I changed it.
Why? Does that mean he's had 33 other accounts that have all been blocked?
That's like not true.
In the past,
I'm not like those
Twitch.
People.
That's the definition of peer pressure.
No, I heard your point. I thought it was valid, and I agreed with you, so I changed it.
Can we get that as a drop?
No.
Okay. All
so right. Now it's my same as my Twitter handle at Joe George Radio.
Well done. I think that's better. I think it's better for our Twitch channel. 713-780-3776. We'll get to Daniel Jeremiah in a moment. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line though. Tommy wants to talk some. Maybe a weakness. Maybe it's a strength. I don't know. I don't know if
Hello.
It's a strength or a weakness.
Hello, gentlemen.
Oh. Hey, Tommy.
Oh, hi, Tommy.
You guys have the best sports show in Houston. And my question was on Phil Maton. How is his hand that he broke last year? How's it doing? And is he pitching again already?
Thank you for the call, Tommy, and the love and support. We appreciate you. Next time, let your full introduction come in so that we can give you some flowers.
Yeah. He might have earned some bonus points, though.
Yeah. We kind of gave him a pass after that. I don't know personally, but I hope he stays away from punching things and just worries about trying to throw strikes.
I never saw Phil Maton being the type of dude that punched his locker, by the way.
Was it more that his brother got a hit off him or that he could see the writing on the wall that he wasn't going to be on the playoff?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Because it was the same day.
Same day.
And he just went and had at it with a locker.
I don't know how his hand is doing. Have we heard any sound from Phil Maton? He hasn't appeared in a spring training game. He hasn't appeared in a game. I mean, I'm assuming that, hand injuries, a broken bone in the hand, that takes 6 weeks.
We know his facial expressions won't tip anything.
But that takes 6 weeks, right?
Like facial expression?
That too. I mean, that's permanent. Actually, it takes longer than 6 weeks.
Hey, Phil, you won the lottery. In 6 weeks, we might see a little bit of the corners of his mouth go up.
You ever broken a bone in your hand for punching something?
Never broken a bone, period.
I think of the two of us, you're probably the more likely to punch something and break a bone.
I think you're right. I've definitely punched a lot of things that I thought I might have broken my hand, but I did not break my hand.
I've broken my thumb, my wrist, and my fibia.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
All now, sports injuries. I may have had broken bones. Like, the most bizarre one was that I had, like, I believe, a hairline fracture in my foot that took, like, 5.5 months. That I went to the medical center and to the Rockets doctors multiple times, MRIs, x-rays, whatever. They could not find anything.
Probably wasn't broken then.
But they guessed that somewhere deep in one of the bones, there was a hairline fracture.
Oh, really?
It was like walking on glass for about 5 months.
I've had, I think I've had 4 broken bones now I think about it. Because I had a broken back, spinal. I had a stress fracture in my back. But I broke my thumb playing baseball. I was playing second base and went to turn a double play, kind of slipped, put my head down, broken thumb. I took a charge playing basketball, broke my right wrist, tried to go back into the game, took a shot, went halfway there. I'm not doing well. And then I broke my fibia. I came playing basketball. I stepped on the back of somebody's foot as they were running, and I sprained my ankle so bad that when my fibia hit the concrete, it put a little crack in it.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was not very fun.
I've had plenty of, like, where I thought my thumb or the top of my hand, including currently, might have a hairline fracture or a fracture from getting slapped at and hit on top of when you're playing basketball. But I just never went and got it checked. I'm just like, it'll heal itself pretty soon.
I would assume that Maton's fine. I need to dig up.
Phil Maton, healthy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a 6-week injury.
This is an article from February 18th from McTaggart. Says the headline is Healthy Phil Maton.
But it's interesting he hasn't appeared in a game.
I was going to say,
that's what's kind of throwing me off.
Are they doing split games yet?
Not yet.
Because I think with split games, you would think he's got to get an appearance here pretty quick.
They've used 25 pitchers so far in spring training. Phil Maton has not thrown a pitch.
Is that more reflective on Phil Maton or the fact that they're just trying to see some of the young pitchers and knows what he can do?
Probably the latter, but I mean, all the regulars have pitched. Yeah. Like, it makes me wonder why hasn't Phil Maton pitched in a game? Like,
yeah, it says healthy, and then Berman's got a video here of him pitching on February 20th, so...
Maybe he's just behind schedule.
Yeah, he's at least throwing.
Yeah, maybe he's behind schedule. Maybe he didn't have the offseason regiment, and they're just waiting like a week or two to put him in a game. But, I mean, I wouldn't imagine that injury being something that's serious and that carries on. Like, that's a 6-week injury. You're in a cast for 6 weeks. You're good to go. Pitching regiment, you should be ready. So I wouldn't think it's severe, but the fact that he hadn't pitched in a game kind of makes me ask questions. All right. Daniel Jeremiah was on with the Paul Gallant Experience the other day, which, I mean, I wonder how many people call into Paul Gallant and say this is the best show on radio, because he is the most interactive show on radio. We do know that. But Jeremiah talking about this. I found this to be an interesting soundbite that I wanted to run this by you, Blankers. Jeremiah, not worried about Bryce Young's height, but he's worried about the weight.
I think it's a great fit for him in Houston. I think it's a great fit for him in Indy. The height doesn't really worry me at all. It's the frame that is the concern. And, you know, he'll show up here. He'll be about 200 pounds. But, you know, it's a real narrow frame from what I've been told. I'm actually excited to see him in person for the first time.
Here's what I think about that, Blinkers. Isn't your frame also your height?
Yeah.
If you were putting up a door
it's
frame,
like your skeletal,
it's the width,
right?
And the height.
Yeah.
Well, what am I missing here?
No, I don't think you're missing anything. I think he might be missing some. I think he's going to be disappointed when he stands next to him for the first time and it looks like he's standing next to a child on the playground.
No, I mean, think
that could be a little bit devastating.
I think it's Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson that, like, short but stocky.
Sure. But
you have to have the frame to be able to hold the weight, the muscle.
Maybe this is me nitpicking more the word usage than the actual point. I tend to do that because the frame is also the height. Like, the frame is the total body. It's not just how wide a dude is. Kyler Murray's frame is that he's wide, but he's short. Bryce Young's frame is that he's short and he's skinny.
Yeah, I think the height is probably a separate category where people say you are as tall as you are. But I think from your skeletal, you could be slight of build, or you could be that stocky athletic, like Joe mentioned, like Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray are, where as opposed to a Baker Mayfield or... you know, other shorter quarterbacks, you know, just from the standpoint of a measurement, they don't have the ability, I think, even if they wanted to hold the kind of weight, the muscle mass that, you know, those two guys can.
Like, I understand the point that he's making.
Sure.
I don't think that the word usage is the best. And I tend to agree with the point that he's making. Like, I have it planned between now and April 27th. I have other things to do on my scouting that I like to do before I go back and watch Bryce Young. But I'm going to go back and watch Bryce Young with the mindset of, is he too short to play the quarterback position? Is he too small to play the quarterback position? Because I've watched every game he's played this year, and there are some moments when he's like, that's a ball that's tipped at the line. That's a ball that you're trying to get it out to the running back out in the flats that I'm not sure gets tipped if it was a taller quarterback, that type of thing. But I wasn't watching with that. I was watching more of, is Bryce Young the best quarterback in this draft, which I think it is debatable. I like him a lot. I like Will Levis a lot, as we know. But I'm gonna go back and watch that. Here was the other thing from Jeremiah that I thought was interesting, Daniel Jeremiah Branham. Valuing quarterbacks that can run. I'm really interested in this debate.
Well, I think what those guys have in common, and I'll put Richardson in there as well, is that while they're developing as passers, they can run around and make enough plays to keep you competitive and keep you in football games, and in some cases win football games. If you look at some of the quarterbacks that have flamed out, first-round quarterbacks, you could say, okay, Josh Rosen, you know, by the looks of it, you know, Zach Wilson's not, you know, he's not going to be the starter there with the Jets. Those guys did not have the legs to buy time for their arm to develop.
He's not right about Wilson.
Zach Wilson's a good athlete, but he can't move around like Josh Allen or Jalen Hurts. They could do the design quarterback run game with those guys to help supplement their offense while, you know, you can need a little bit of time to figure out the passing game.
If you want people to run like Jalen Hurts and Josh Allen, well, you're not going to find many. Like, those are two of the top five running quarterbacks in the NFL. Zach Wilson can run. Zach Wilson has good feet. Zach Wilson, as Daniel Jeremiah would later admit, is a good athlete. But that's not really what I was trying to talk about. Where do you stand on the quarterback needs to be able to have the element of being able to run?
Well, I think there's a different way of looking at that, right? Do you want a guy that has escapability, that can extend or make plays? Or do you want a guy that is going to be a weapon running the football offensively? Because I think it's two different things. I think that you see Patrick Mahomes is a perfect example. I don't think Patrick Mahomes ever wants to be a running quarterback. But because of his escapability and his ability to be nimble on his feet enough to extend plays and in certain circumstances gain some yards running, he's extremely effective at his position. There are other guys like Lamar Jackson, like Jalen Hurts, like guys that, as part of their repertoire that's used on a regular basis, they are taking carries as a quarterback, literally, on called running plays for the quarterback. Uh-huh. And so I think it's different. But I think that in today's NFL with the run-pass options, you don't have to go to the extent that the Eagles and the Ravens have done it. But I think that more and more offensive coordinators like having the element of a quarterback that to catch a defense kind of napping or assuming that they're going to, you know, stay in the pocket or do certain things, that you can get yards running the football with a quarterback that's capable.
I think you need to have somewhat of a baseline of athleticism and like the ability to do it, but not necessarily go to it a lot. In fact, I think it could be a detriment whenever you're looking to run instead of throw, which a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL at times tend to do that. This is going to be, maybe this could be a late submission into Bad Take Boulevard for the 16 Bad Take bracket that we're going to unveil today because we have Joe Lunardi on the show today. I think it's overrated to have a quarterback that can run. Yeah, certainly Pat Mahomes can run. Pat Mahomes didn't do a whole lot of running this year in the Super Bowl. Why? Because he had a sprained ankle. Yeah. Like he won in the conference championship game in the Super Bowl with a sprained ankle. Can Matthew Stafford run? I don't think so. Nope. Tom Brady has more Super Bowl championships kind of recently, too. He won one 3 years ago. He has more Super Bowl championships than any franchise in NFL history.
He doesn't run.
He doesn't run. I think that we overrate the highlight a lot of times and underrate the ability to just make like the simple play, like watching, get rid of the football and negate negative plays.
Watching Rodgers as much as I have, Rodgers is never going to have a called run for him, or it's going to be one of the most random situations ever for, like, you know, a fourth and one where he fakes the handoff and everybody's thinking it's going over the top and then he just scampers to the outside and gets out of bounds. Mm-hmm. But when he needs to run by, you know, the pocket collapsing, he's fully capable and a lot of times has turned it into big plays by running when it's warranted. And I think that's the biggest difference.
And if we use San Francisco as like an example of this, Jimmy Garoppolo, Brock Purdy, like not necessarily quarterbacks that are all that mobile. What do you think? 713-780-3776. Joe Lunardi, ESPN bracketologist, maybe the best in the business. He joins the Killer Bees next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.